Alrighty, welcome back to another episode of Justify Your Existence. I'm your host, Brendan Verrill, and today I am joined by our Ole Miss writer, Michael Katz. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you? I can't believe that. I guess technically we're 2 weeks into the season, depending on who you depending on who you root for or what teams you follow. It was quite the adventure to see 0-2 Florida State after technically 1 week after week one. So it's we're right in the thick of things.
Yeah, no, after what my alma mater did last week, that was food for the soul. So,
Yeah, that was at least you got what Samford this week. You get DJ Lagway is going to start, so like there's a little hope, right?
yeah, exactly. I don't know. My whole thing is you got to get the digs in while you still can, right? So,
Yeah, exactly. Yep, exactly.
but yeah, if you want to follow me on Twitter as I slowly spiral into madness this college football season, you can follow me on Twitter at bferrell727. And if you want actual coverage, you can follow Michael on Twitter at Michael L. Katz. Michael, this was supposed to be our sort of Ole Miss season preview, and then life kind of got in the way. But I can't really say that we are in a different spot than we were last week on the Ole Miss front.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say I didn't learn anything in their 76 to nothing win. I think, I guess like looking around the country, and there's a lot of teams that played games like this where they played against really good FCS teams, but teams that really didn't stand a chance. And most of them took care of business the way they should, but like you look at Oregon and Idaho. And like I know the yardage disparity in that game, the game was not really as close as the score indicated, but still it was a 10-point, Oregon win at home. That one got a little bit dicey, and that was not decided until the fourth quarter, which is kind of crazy. When you look at what Ole Miss did to a similar caliber opponent, and I mean that game was over in 3 minutes. I mean it was th there was never. There was never a doubt. I didn't think there was any chance before the game, but Ole Miss went out there that first drive, took the ball, and said, "We're gonna make this a very fast game." So, I think that the biggest thing for me is they did what they were supposed to do, and they played a really clean game. They didn't turn the ball over. They weren't dropping passes for the most part. Jackson Dart was super sharp. 418 passing yards in the first half. Five. Passing touchdowns, six total touchdowns. Again, I know it's against Furman, but he's putting the ball where it was supposed to be, and in not in making the right reads. I think in week one against an overmatched opponent, those are the things you need to see. You also want to make sure your team is tackling and stuff because Ole Miss, did take it a little bit light during their camp in terms of the intensity and wanting to make sure that guys don't get beat up. This was really kind of a chance for guys to really start, hitting it at full speed. I'm not saying that they didn't at all. They obviously did, towards the end of their fall camp. But this was really a chance for them to go out there, full speed and really focus on the fundamentals without having to worry about getting your guys hurt. And they played a really clean game. I mean, they outgained Furman by 600 yards, I think was the total, 772 to 172. Held him to 26 rushing yards. That defensive line was just as good as we thought it would be. I think they checked off every box. I mean, even last year, when they played Mercer and they beat them 73-7 or whatever it was, Mercer scored a touchdown on their very first play, a 75-yard quarterback run up the middle. That was the first time we ever saw a Pete Golding Ole Miss defense. And yeah, it was one play and nothing happened after that, but it was still like, it was something, right? This one, like I know that coaches can nitpick and they're going to nitpick because that's what they need to do. But I don't think you can really look at this and say there wasn't a whole ton, that went wrong, at least from our vantage point.
Yeah, really, the only thing I can bring to this is that my only go-to Furman trivia is that it is both the alma maters of Florida head coach Billy Napier and Need to Breathe frontman Bear Reinhart, and they played together. That's kind of all I know about
Did not
firmware.
know that.
Yeah, no, it's very weird.
That's a random one.
Yeah, there's some fun videos you can find on YouTube of Napier throwing to Bear Reinhardt, but yeah, it's interesting. But yeah, I mean, these games against FPS opponents a lot of times are, I don't know, this is maybe not like the greatest comparison in the world, but to me it's not too dissimilar to like a spring game where it's like just put on a good show. Nobody's gonna remember the score of this game, right? Like I remember like the first game that like Mullen coached at Florida was they played Charleston Southern and they were up 24-0 and they're driving down to score again. He's like, yeah, we'll let Felipe Franks, run a jump pass because who cares? Right. And it'll be fun for the fans to see a jump pass. It's just stuff like that. It's like, okay, cool. You didn't struggle win. You got this thing over with pretty quickly. Everybody you wanted to see look good, looked good. All right, on to the next week.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, like, okay, who did people want to see do well? Well, no one's seen Juice Wells play in a while, not at full strength anyway. Okay, well, let's throw a 61-yard touchdown pass to him. And people will be like, oh my gosh, Juice Wells is still very, very good. There's another guy you have to cover. Here's Trey Harris. Is he still good? Yes, he's still very, very good. Jackson Dart, has he gotten even more explosive? How's his deep ball? Okay, well, we'll show you him throwing to receivers open by 15 yards and him hitting them right in stride. So it's like, it's one of those things where I think that for fans, like you said, like you come in wanting to see certain things, and in a game like that, you pretty much see them all. Like the only thing that like maybe they didn't see was like Ulysses Bentley and Henry Parrish running the ball a ton. I know they ended up with like 240-ish rushing yards overall, but for the most part, like in the first half when all the starters and Dart were in, it was a really passing focused attack. And so I guess if you want to like nitpick something that maybe you didn't see, it's a little more emphasis on that running game. So this week, that means they're probably going to run for 800 yards against Middle Tennessee, just to show people that they can. I mean, I think it's just one of those things where, in these sorts of games, I think you can choose to focus on certain things, and the focus was clearly the passing game in week one. Will it be the same week two? Who knows? But whatever they want to get out of the game, Ole Miss is going to get out of the game. I think that's pretty clear.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of mentioned about them, with the ground game. It was the kind of day where, we didn't really see Ulysses Bentley that much to the point where JJ Beguise had a third of his carries. Just some fun math for you.
Yeah, JJ Pegues on that fourth and one or two, whatever it was, man, I could like feel him knock that poor man over. And then I love how they would just like give him the ball again and let him score. Like, let him have this. It was it's so funny because JJ is like this really like hearty, soft-spoken, just like really like joyous guy. And obviously he's from Oxford. He played running back here and he was a tight end. It's just so funny because he's such a huge dude. Seeing him get carries is always a treat for everybody in attendance.
Yeah, and I always love to see that everybody gets hyped up for a good big man carry. But yeah, you mentioned Middle Tennessee State. It's probably not going to be too much of a difference. Just looking at Bill Connell's SP Plus rankings, Middle Tennessee State is 120th in the country. So I'm going to say that we're probably also not going to be too broken up about what happens this weekend.
I mean, let's be honest, Middle Tennessee struggled with Tennessee Tech. I mean, that was a very close game. I think they ended up winning by a touchdown. And they were outgained by Tennessee Tech in that game. Does it look like it's going to be a particularly entertaining game? Probably not. Of course, you never know what happens. And Derek Mason does have a very good reputation historically as a good defensive coach. He's faced Lane several times. When he was at Stanford, Lane was at USC. When he was at Auburn, obviously at Vanderbilt. So I think that you know th there will be things that Ole Miss is going to want to work on, but I don't think that Ole Miss is going to be particularly tested in this game. Again, I think that whatever Ole Miss wants to get out of this game, they'll probably get out of this game. Of course, you never the biggest thing is make sure no one gets injured. You just never want something like that to happen in a game where you are supposed to win by 42, whatever the spread is now. Play a clean game, keep everybody healthy, get out of there, head to Winston-Salem next weekend. But yeah, I don't foresee this being a particularly challenging game. Not like it's going to be. I don't want to say it's going to be easier or harder than Furman. I can't really compare those two teams quite yet. But I think Ole Miss is going to be able to do probably anything it wants on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like everybody was saying kind of preseason about how, not challenging Ole Miss's non-conference slate is this year. Is there anything like specifically like you're watching for them to kind of get right before conference play kicks in here in a couple weeks?
I mean, I'm curious to see them go on the road. And I know that it's Wake Forest, and Wake Forest struggled in their first game against North Carolina A&T or whoever it was. I believe it was an FCS opponent. That was a pretty close game for a bit. On paper, that's not going to be particularly challenging, but I think the first time you go on the road is always you always want to see like what that looks like. And again, this is a veteran team with so many guys back that have played for Ole Miss and have played in tough road environments. Like, it's not like they're going to be shaken or anything, but going on the road for the first time is always something that you do wonder about. So I think that's I'm curious for that about that. And obviously they have some really tough road games in SEC play with South Carolina and LSU and Florida, Arkansas. I mean they've got some really tough ones. So I think working out all those sorts of kinks in a non-conference road game probably makes everything else a little bit easier, making sure all the helmet communication stuff works right. All those sorts of things I think are, for a first road game, at least for me, I'm really curious to see like what is how does the order of operations work? How does everything travel and does your team do you play with the same confidence on the road that you do at home? I feel like they're going to. I think this team is just really good and really veteran, but it's something for at least for me to watch.
Yeah, especially because that was kind of their first test last year was going to Tulane on the road.
Yeah, no, that and that was yeah, that was game, yeah, it was game two. And that was a weird game because I mean it was really close and then Ole Miss kind of blew him out there at the end and Tulane had a backup quarterback and I mean, that was a bizarre one. And obviously that game that win ended up aging very well because Tulane ended up being very good. I don't know if Wake Forest is as good as that Tulane team was last year. I do know that their offense tends to, at least when it's been at its best, will give defenses problems in the way that they attack. They've had some really good quarterback play there over the last few years, and they've got another, I believe Hank Bachmeyer now is their quarterback. He was at Boise State when I was still out there, so it is crazy how it all sort of comes around. Again, I think it's Ole Miss is going to get out of this non-conference schedule what it wants. I think that if they're right, I don't think any of these games are going to be particularly close.
Yeah, so I think my big question mark for Ole Miss heading into the year was the offensive line, because I feel like it was just one of the things that just held them back, both from a, kind of pass blocking perspective, but also it just felt like that was like the big key for why they had, they struggled to a certain degree running the ball last year, was I felt like it was mostly up front. And, there are some kind of moving parts up front this year. What did you think on Saturday?
It was a little bit hard because there are still some pieces that are injured. Jerquan Scott didn't play. There's still some. I don't think they were quite at full strength quite yet. But it was interesting, like what that starting lineup was. I don't know if that's what it's going to look like in a couple of weeks. Because again, everybody did play. Throughout that game, Jaden Williams got the start at left tackle. He's a guy who started every game in 2022, only started two games, I believe, last year. He's still there, but they also brought in Diego Pounds, who's was a starter at North Carolina last year. You obviously brought in two guys from Washington, and those two guys, I believe did get this. I believe they both started this past weekend. Jerquan Scott had been getting a lot of reps at center. He wasn't available this past week. So I think there are a lot of moving parts. I think the early returns are positive. Like, I think that they feel like, regardless of what the combinations were, they feel better about those combinations than they did last year because of an athleticism, strength, talent standpoint. I understand that a lot of those guys are the same, but I think those guys got better. And obviously, you brought in guys who they probably feel are better. That's why you bring new guys in. So I think that, I think the jury's out in terms of, like, the jury's still out in terms of what is that actual combination going to look like when the games start getting a little bit tougher. But I think that they feel pretty good about what they've seen, at least so far.
Yeah, just in case, I don't know, this is kind of a weird comparison, but I'm gonna roll with it. Last year against Mercer, they ran for 143 yards on 33 carries, so like 4.3 yards a carry. This year they were up to 243 yards and 6.6 per carry. So again, it's probably not like a good like for like comparison, but I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, no, and again, it's like that also didn't even feel like a game where Ole Miss ran the ball well, but here you look at the end, it's they're almost 250 yards. Like, they did run the ball well. So I think, again, I think it just it bodes well for, there's still a work in progress, I think, in terms of continuity and figuring out who fits best where and getting guys healthy. But I think that overall the early returns, they seem to be pretty positive on that front.
Yeah, how do you think the carries kind of end up between Parrish and Bentley?
I mean, I would think that, like, Bentley is probably top of the food chain. I the thing I was a little bit curious about, or I guess not confused, but I was a little weird seeing Rashad Amos maybe not get the sort of carries that at least we from the outside envisioned. He was a guy who's a bell cow at Miami, Ohio, ran for a ton of yards and a ton of touchdowns last year. He's a big, strong kid. And he really didn't start getting his carries until a little bit later in the game. So again, maybe it's familiarity. Maybe he, again, we were only able to see so much of practice. So maybe he wasn't getting as many reps because of, injury, whatever it was. But I was a little bit, I at least thought it was going to be a three-headed monster with Bentley, Parrish, and Amos, and it might still end up being that way. But it was interesting to sort of see it not go that way, at least in game one. And again, it could completely change this week and going forward. But it was, and I know they didn't run the ball a ton with Bentley and Parrish anyway. But it was pretty clear those two guys were, like, at the top of the pecking order, at least for that game.
You know, it's funny that you bring up Rashad Amos because surely Ole Miss has to be the only team in college football history to have both of the previous year's leading rushers at both Miami schools on the same roster.
They've got a lot of they've got that they've got to be leading the SEC in cadence and in guys with the nickname Juice.
Yeah, I
There's
mean.
three juices and then the dog.
Yeah, I was gonna say, are we counting the dog in there? That's gonna be
Come
the
on, that's the most important one of all.
That's true. The dog does have like that honorary degree, right? So
He does a potter it or whatever they called it. Yeah.
painful.
No.
Painful. But you mentioned the Cadens. It's a good thing that Utah is not in the SEC, so
Fair enough.
after spending some time out there, you truly do have some cursed names out there. And I'm sure that you would have about six different spellings of Caden too. So
Yeah, I think there's only two different spellings, but they got Aiden's as well. There's it's I have to, I always I know this roster pretty well, but I find myself looking up just to make sure I didn't forget a Y in there somewhere.
I mean, look, having Jackson Dart, spelled JAXSON, is just like a little taste of Utah names for you. So,
Man, that one's second. I don't even think my computer thinks I spelled that one wrong anymore. It doesn't even bother underlining it. It's been like 2.5 years and it knows better. It's still getting used to Uman Mielen, though. I don't think it's ever going to feel quite right with that one.
well, it probably also doesn't like Princely beforehand.
Correct. Correct. A lot of red. A lot of red.
But yeah, I mean, just I don't know, just in general, like, how are you feeling a week into this? And now that you have like actual football to talk about instead of the speculative, we think this team's gonna be really good for, the last like 9 months or whatever.
Yeah, I mean it's nice again, especially when our practice viewing was somewhat limited, and I know that's a thing that happens around the country, and that's not just an Ole Miss thing. But you come in with like, here's how I think this team is going to be, and like you write these previews, you help write these magazine previews, you go on podcasts and radio shows and you say all this stuff, but it's like at the end of the day, like you really don't know what this team looks like. We're not supposed to, we can't. So then to actually finally see what they look like and to see that like, oh, okay, yes, they were good in this area like they're supposed to be. This area might be an area of concern like we thought it was. It's just nice to have, like you said, something to actually talk about.
Yeah, I will say, well, first off, I don't know what you're talking about with when you talk about all these podcasts that you get invited on to talk about speculative Ole Miss stuff. I don't know what you're talking about there. Second, I saw that you also wrote a story about Ole Miss's defensive line. I don't think we've touched on it. So, what did you think of sort of their somewhat new look defensive line?
Yeah, it's that's like all, and that's been the conversation, right? It was like this defensive line is gonna be a problem. You bring in Walter Nolan, who was as big a recruit as there was in the country coming to high school. He was as big of a transfer prospect as there was. You get him to really beef up the middle of that defense, and you bring in Princely Mon-Mielen to really be dynamic off the edge. You bring in these guys. Again, it always sort of goes back to that Georgia game where they really got beat up up front, and there was really just been this effort since then to get bigger, stronger, faster on both lines. And the defensive line, and Lane Kiffin has said this, like they look different. It just looks a certain way that they haven't looked since I think he said anywhere that he's been the head coach. He's just never had a front where you look out there and you just see these dudes. And again, I know it was Furman. It's going to get a lot harder than that. But I mean, they're blowing up blocks, like pulling guards are just getting smashed in the backfield. Like you got running backs getting hit 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage. I mean, they did everything that you wanted if you're a fan to see them do in just terms of bullying people. And I don't I feel it's probably going to be the same again this week. It's probably going to be the same against Wake Forest. It's probably going to be the same against Georgia Southern. I don't think that there's going to be many matchups where that defensive line isn't going to be a mismatch. And after 1 week, I didn't see anything that would make me possibly think otherwise.
Yeah, so it just kind of, I don't know, in case you're wondering how much of an impact maybe some of these transfers are already making, the what top four players by PFF grades or defensive grades for Ole Miss, in case you anyone wants to buy into this, were Trey Amos, Princely Umanmielen, Chris or what Poopall, and Walter Nolan. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, look, and you're trying to get you want to see your new guys play well. I mean, I know everybody pretty much played well for Ole Miss this week, but I think it makes you feel good as a coaching staff and a recruiting staff when you see that the guys you brought in are among the biggest difference makers.
Yeah, so I don't know. Is I feel like we've talked about a decent amount. Is there anything that like you want to touch on?
I'm just I'm excited to, well, one, it's a day game this week. That's among my biggest blessings. I always tell people if every game was at 11 a.m., I would be a much happier human being. And for this one's at 3:15, I believe, so a little bit later. But I, it's just I this Ole Miss team is just going to keep taking care of business. I think that they're focused. I think that they haven't bought into all the hype around them. I think they obviously know that they're very good, but this isn't a team that is, looking at its press clippings and talking about how good it is. And I think that that can kind of go either way with really good teams, and it can backfire if you do buy into it too much. So this just really seems to be a focused team with a singular goal. Listen, there's a reason Jackson Dart came back. There's a reason all of these guys came back. Like, they want to make the playoff, and they know they have a chance to do something special. I just if just they just feel too focused to let little dumb things get in the way of that. And week one, there were no distractions. I mean, that was a team with a mission. I think it's going to be the same again this week. I think it's going to be the same again most weeks. I think this team understands what's at stake and what is potentially in front of them.
I don't think I've actually gotten like a full-on like prediction out of you. So, what do you where do you think this team ends up?
Like, season record?
Season record, postseason, that kind of deal.
I think 10-2 probably feels pretty good. I don't know what the two are going to be. I'm still not really sure what LSU is. After this past weekend, they got some stuff to work on. Obviously, that was a really good game against my beloved Trojans. That was a very that was an exhilarating one. I was not expecting that one to go the way it did. But they got to play at LSU. That's a house of horrors for most places. It's the 100th anniversary of Tiger Stadium. Like, that place is going to be absolutely insane. You still have to host Georgia. You still have to host Oklahoma. You got to play at Florida and South Carolina, which I know that those teams shouldn't provide challenges, but you never know what happens in a road game in the SEC. Weird things do happen. So, but I think 10-2 feels about right, and I think that if you go 10-2, and you notch the kinds of wins that 10-2 would probably get you at. I think that you have to, like, I think a 10-2 SEC team is almost a guarantee, especially from where they started, because they were so highly ranked, preseason number six. I think it'd be hard to keep them out of one of the, I don't think they're going to be I don't imagine, it's going to be hard for them to win the SEC. I think Georgia is still impossibly good, and Texas is really, really good. There's a lot of really good teams in this conference, but to get into that 12-team playoff and get to one of those first round host situations, I think something like that's on the table.
Yeah, I feel like my only thing with like 10-2, like while it sounds good on paper, and I think 2 years ago anybody would have taken that, would be that, you would probably be losing your two biggest games of the season.
Potentially.
It'd still be enough to like get to the playoffs, and I think again everybody would take getting to the playoffs at the beginning of the year. But I think also it would probably mean some kind of missed opportunity for like a really like, I don't want to say quite like 2014 Alabama-esque win, but like I feel like at a certain point this year you got to have some kind of like big triumphant win. I don't know.
I also think you can't get blown out. I think that's a big one too. Like, even if you lose, you can't lose ugly. You can't have the 20-point loss at LSU or the 40-point loss against Georgia. I don't think you can have those sorts of things. If you lose a close game, obviously it sucks, and it's a game you probably, if it's close, you probably felt you could have won. But I think you got to win the games that you're supposed to win handily. If you can pull the win at LSU, if you can beat Georgia, obviously that is going to make a world of difference. And who knows, maybe other teams on the SEC schedule actually end up being better than we thought, and it ends up being good wins or whatever. But yeah, I mean, of course, if you win winning one of those big games is in a perfect world, that's how it goes. But you know, it's just, I think it's just so hard to go undefeated or 11-1 in college football these days, with just how good everybody seems to be, for the most part, and sort of the balance of power. But it's, again, it's just hard for me to see a 10-2 Ole Miss team getting left out. It could totally happen. We have seen teams get left out of certain circumstances. But I think that this team's, it's going to be in a really good, really, it's going to put itself in a really good position to be one of those 12.
Gotcha. That's all I have. I would like to give you the floor to plug whatever you'd like.
You know, I wish I'd done this last week, 'cause I would have plugged my Hotty Toddy story.
You still can.
Okay, I will. I took it upon myself to try to discover what on earth Hotty Toddy means and where it comes from. And depending on who you ask, I either did a really good job on it or didn't get anywhere with it. And I think that's just part of what makes the story great. It's because no one really, you can ask all the historians you want, and no one really knows what it means and where it comes from. And it really doesn't matter. And it ended up being this really, one of my favorite stories that I've read, or that I've written, sorry. Just because there were just so many interesting people to talk to, and sort of, you know, thoughts. I usually write about people. I don't write about things. And so it was really cool to write about this sort of nebulous topic that I know everybody has at least thought of or questioned at some point. You know, I'm from California. I remember being like, what does this mean? Like, what are these words? These aren't words. Like, what does this mean? There's a lot of people that feel that way. But writing the story, it's kind of cool. It was really cool to see that no one really knows, and it almost doesn't matter where it came from and what it means anyway, because it's more than just you know, some words on a piece of paper, or words to a song, or words to a chant. It's got emotional meaning for people, and it was really cool to sort of uncover that. So that was a big story I had last week, and I since I wasn't on last week, I'm gonna plug it here. So we will take all the page views we can.
You know, really, this is sort of spoilers, but the real Hottie Toddy is the friends we made along the way. So,
Yeah, you know, that was actually my that was my last paragraph, and I decided to nix it because I thought it would sort of undermine the other 2,400 words.
but yes, Michael and I, we both write for the Daily Journal. You can find all of our sports coverage at djournal.com. You can follow me on Twitter at bferrell727. You can follow Michael on Twitter at Michael L. Katz. Thank you all for listening. Michael, thank you for joining me.
Of course, man. Thanks for having me. Sorry, sorry about last week, but we will get consistent. That's the key to a great football team. That's the key to a great podcaster. It's to be consistent.
Yeah, and execution.
Yes, execution. Yes, absolutely.
So, you know what? After last week, we reevaluated and executed this week.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you again for listening, and have a good one.